The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the start of another work week here at Edstone. Beautiful day, beautiful weekend. It's just been a gorgeous time of year. Of course, the time change has finally happened here in the UK, so we're in sync once again after 3 weeks of rush, rush, rush. Now it's back to normal, 1 p.m. here in the UK, 2 p.m. in the continent of Europe, so we're all on board. Today we have lots to get to. Coming up later in the show, we'll be talking about a big story that broke, I guess, just yesterday. This new bulla that was found in the City of David excavations, not one that we're associated with, unfortunately, but some exciting finds nonetheless. And it happens on the day, it's the last day of our exhibit. Yesterday was the last day of the Hezekiah Isaiah bulla exhibit. So if you miss that exhibit, you'll have to, hopefully see it in Jerusalem somewhere. It'll probably be, in the Israel Museum or somewhere in Jerusalem. I think the Antiquities Authority, an official from that organization, will be in Edmond later this week to oversee the packaging of that wonderful exhibit as it eventually makes its way back to Israel. So we'll talk about that later on in the show. And together with that breaking news, there was also an in-depth feature in the Sunday Times, the New York Times from yesterday, that talked about some of the excavating that's going on in the City of David. And they draw attention to David Beery, of all people. They go into quite a lot of detail on his life. And given that my father just talked about this at length in the March 11th coworker letter, I think you'll be interested to see what the New York Times has to say. We also have a clip from John Bolton over the weekend, who was speaking on behalf of the Trump administration, just telling a station here in the UK how much the Trump administration is looking forward to a trade deal with the UK, hoping that they'll come out of the EU as soon as possible so that the U.S. and the U.K. can come together in trade. This is something that we've talked about before, a couple of years ago, in fact, early on in the Trump presidency, when he was saying that the U.K. leaving the EU would be good for them. It would be good for trade. It would be good for trade for the U.K. and for the United States. So we'll bring you up to date with some of those statements going back to 2 years ago, and then the statement that John Bolton made to Sky News as well. If we have time, we've got a fair bit of material. If not, it will get pushed back, but we'll cover it before the Passover days of unleavened bread are upon us. This subject of confronting sin, this was something I wanted to get into last week. Didn't quite have enough time, though, on one of those programs. But before I get into the news here at the top of the show, I'd like to read through a couple of emails that came in response to Friday's program, Homeless in Seattle. You can get to that program and all of our podcasts at the trumpet.com website and also at kpcg.fm. In that Friday program, we spent probably 30 or 40 minutes in the second segment just expounding upon this local station in Seattle that put together this hour-long special, this documentary about what was happening on the streets of Seattle. A really, really sad story, for sure. In response to that, we had a few listeners write in. One says, your program Friday on the homeless in Seattle was one of my favorite Trumpet dailies. You mentioned how the people living there suffered the most with high crime, drugs, and death. The other cities that are suffering also, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New Jersey, and here in Philadelphia, he says, these are dark times in America, After your program Friday, I watched the YouTube video, Seattle is Dying. It's hard to believe this is America. Well, that video, by the way, that's the video that we played some excerpts from. We had several audio sound bites in Friday's program. So you can get a synopsis of that video by just listening to our show, but you can also probably find that YouTube video out there as well. Another one here says, listening to just how bad it is in Seattle, it seems all too familiar in Canada since we have legalized marijuana. My father and I were walking out of our local mall, and there was a sign that said, no smoking, and then one below that that said, no vaping. And then the newest one says, no smoking marijuana. We could only think how sad it is that we need those signs because we know God doesn't approve of any of it. And now our local mayor and premier are trying to build what they build what are called safe injection sites where people addicted to drugs can go and have a doctor or nurse help them take those drugs, quote unquote, safely. It's sad to see the way we are destroying ourselves. Imagine that back in the days of the founders, for example, clinics set up so that you could inject these mind-altering substances in the safest possible way, of course. It says here, this third one, what a program and how very sad. Listen to this. This comes from someone who used to live in Seattle. He writes, I'm from the Seattle area, moved to Oklahoma 6 years ago. I frequently tell people Seattle's my favorite big city. How gorgeous it is on a sunny day, which is rare, I know. And the character of that city that I grew up around, how wonderful it was to go to Pike Place Market and to watch the salmon throwing and then enjoy the sunset overlooking Puget Sound. A breathtaking sight. He says, I'm glad I did not see what has happened to my city, and I'm shocked listening to the residents, police, and especially that arrogant homeless man who was interviewed. This is a broken city, and it's a great shame of America. I long so much for the world coming that you describe. What a glorious future we all have, but first, we must endure these dark days. Keep up the great work. This program is the best daily program on the planet. Well, we are able to cram quite a lot into 55 minutes every single day. We typically have one promo, I guess, but when you strip away all of the advertisements, all of the radio hosts these days that are themselves reading through ads on their show, it really does allow for us, when we don't have any of that, to get through quite a lot of material in less than 1 hour. So we appreciate that feedback. You can send your comments, of course, to us anytime, as I say on each show. And don't forget, as I said Friday, you've got the option now, too, if you go over to the TDRS page on the trumpet.com website, to submit an audio file for us. And that way, if we're able to get to those soon enough, we can maybe play one of your comments live on the air. Well, over the weekend, President Trump, he cut aid to three Central American countries as this migrant crisis just worsens significantly. He's now threatening even to close the border. From the USA Today, it says 700 miles east, busload after busload of weary, bedraggled migrants crowd into the Catholic Charities Humanitarian Respite Center in McAllen, Texas. Listen to this. Organizers there are used to handling 200 to 300 migrants a day. Lately, the migrants have been arriving at a clip of around 800 a day. So we're looking at 3 to 4 times what's considered normal. And it says here that the respite center is just overflowing with immigrants and that it's putting quite a strain on city resources. You can imagine. The McAllen city manager, Roy Rodriguez, he said it's staggering. Really, we've never seen anything like this before. We've never seen anything like this before on Friday. Jay Johnson. He was the Homeland Secretary, Security Secretary under Barack Obama. He's on MSNBC with Mika Brzezinski, and she was probably a little surprised to hear what he had to say as an initial matter. He gave it some context with these comments, and you'll hear the exchange here between Brzezinski and Jay Johnson. But he sets it up by saying it's certainly a crisis. He gives you the facts and the figures and then says, this is definitely a crisis. And, of course, that's what the mainstream media is trying to conceal. Because, well, President Trump says it's a crisis, so we say it's not a crisis. President Trump says it's abnormal, and so we say this is normal. This is the way it's always been. Listen to this exchange from MSNBC on Friday, clip one.
Where do we begin with what the Homeland Security Secretary is proposing here? I guess first, just in terms of what our country is about, do these proposals even come close to representing America?
Well, first, Mika, thanks for having me. A little bit of context here. When I was in office in Kirstjen Nielsen's job at her desk, I'd get to work around 6:30 in the morning, and there'd be my intelligence book sitting on my desk, the PDB, and also the apprehension numbers from the day before. And I'd look at them every morning. It'd be the first thing I'd look at, and I probably got too close to the problem. And my staff will tell you, if it was under 1,000 apprehensions the day before, that was a relatively good number. And if it was above 1,000, it was a relatively bad number, and I was going to be in a bad mood the whole day. On Tuesday, there were 4,000 apprehensions. I know that 1,000 overwhelms the system. I cannot begin to imagine what 4,000 a day looks like. So we are truly in a crisis.
That's Obama's Homeland Security Secretary. Now, Kirstjen Nielsen, the one he mentions, she's working for President Trump. She's harsh. She's cruel. She wants to split apart families. She wants to send people back. She's an alarmist. Here's Jay Johnson saying, if it was over 1,000 when I was in office, my staff knew I was going to be in a bad mood all day long. It's not over 1,000. It's 4,000. Now it's four times as bad. That's a crisis, if ever there was one. There's lots of things that need to be done to fix it, but look at what America's broken government is doing, or rather not doing. They can't do anything. They won't do anything. They haven't done anything for decades. President Trump, to his credit, he wants to do something. He's trying to do something. But he can't get much support in Congress. The USA Today said along the Texas border with Mexico, from El Paso to Eagle Pass to the Rio Grande Valley, masses of migrants have been crossing the border in unprecedented numbers. They're overwhelming federal holding facilities and sending local leaders and volunteers scrambling to deal with the relentless waves of people. And yet you have all of the bleeding heart liberals living in their gated communities crying out that we can't do anything. We don't need a wall. President Trump's wrong. Just let these facilities get overwhelmed. It says U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner, he said Wednesday during the visit to El Paso that the border had hit its breaking point. Well, we know that, in fact, this is prophesied. God said it would happen in Deuteronomy 28. He said so. It's right there in the prophecies of God. We're on a disastrous course. And America really and truly is unraveling at the seams. Last week, of course, there were quite a few stories on the Mueller investigation, the release of the report, the summary by the Attorney General last Sunday, and then, of course, all the stories that rolled out in the week that followed about this absurd collusion delusion, as the president calls it. Conrad Black at the National Post, he picked up on that saying and said that almost all foreigners missed. He's really berating the international press, saying that almost all foreigners missed the greatest American political story in 150 years. They couldn't accept it in America or internationally, for that matter. They could not accept the fact that Donald Trump won, and so they come up with this absurd conspiracy theory saying that he cheated, saying that he rigged it with the help of Vladimir Putin. And in doing that, says Conrad Black, they actually missed, the media missed, the greatest American political story in 150 years. Which is what? It's not that Donald Trump colluded. The greatest story, the political story in 150 years is the attempted manipulation of a presidential election by the country's intelligence and federal police forces. That's where the scandal is. That's what needs to be investigated. The investigators, they need to be investigated. I thought it was pretty funny yesterday. I didn't bring these clips with me, but you had a Fox commentator over the weekend saying that the investigators need to be looked into, and if they broke the law, they need to go to jail. And the CNN commentator, Brian Stelter, it came back to him live, and he just said, I don't even know what to say. He can't even understand someone that would be so crazy in his mind, so crazy as to say if these investigators, if these police forces, if these intelligence agents were breaking the law, they should go to jail. Here, the major media, including Brian Stelter, for 2 years have been saying Donald Trump needs to go to jail, Don Jr. needs to go to jail, all of his friends, his family, the whole crew, they need to go to jail. We played a montage for you last week. That didn't faze them at all. That didn't faze Brian Stelter at all. And now one person, one commentator, says, well, actually, it's the others that need to go to jail. And they're stunned. They're so blinded by their bias. So blinded on both coasts, the East Coast, the West Coast. And meanwhile, everybody in between, they pretty much see through this now. Voters agree with Trump on the Russian probe. That's from the American Spectator. And it runs through all of these recent polls, where they see that this was just a political hit job. They now see this. This is from The Spectator. It says, congressional Democrats are committing a grave political blunder by continuing to push Russia conspiracy theories and insinuating that Attorney General William Barr is perpetrating a cover-up by complying with the law in his handling of the Mueller report. He's covering it up. Now William Barr's the problem. Anyone that says anything that in any way sides with the president, he's obviously a conspirator, obviously. So blinded by bias. Here's this 2-year investigation. We've had 2 congressional inquiries as well. And now the polls are coming in following the release of the report. Spectator says several polls conducted since the Mueller probe ended suggest that most Americans believe the president is innocent of wrongdoing and that the Democrats are merely playing politics. And yet they continue. And their allies in the media, they continue. They continue on with their conspiracy theories. Coming back to this point about looking into the investigators and just all the abuse, the abuses of power. Lee Smith, we quote him often here on the program, over at Tablet Magazine. He talks about the release of the Mueller report and says that the abuse of power that the special counsel embodied is a deadly cancer on American democracy. 2 years of investigations have left families in ruins, stripping them of their savings, their homes, threatening their liberty, and dragging their names through the mud. The investigation of the century was partly based on the possibility that Michael Flynn, a combat veteran who served his country for more than 3 decades, might be a Russian spy. because of a dinner he once attended in Moscow, and because, as incoming national security advisor, he spoke to the Russian ambassador in Washington. "What rot," Smith says. "None of what went on the last 2 years would have been possible without the press, an indispensable partner in the biggest political scandal in a generation." Well, I would say it's the biggest political scandal, and more than that. Conrad Black says they missed it, this scandal. The greatest political story in 150 years, in fact. That tablet, Lee Smith says, the campaign was waged not in hidden corners of the internet, but rather by the country's most prestigious news organizations, including, but not only, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, and MSNBC. The farce that has passed for public discourse the last 2 years was fueled by a concerted effort of the media and the pundit class to obscure gaping holes in logic as well as law. And yet they all appear to be credible because the institutions sustaining them are credible, supposedly. Supposedly, we could add. They appear to be credible because, well, if every night they're saying it on MSNBC and CNN, if every day they're saying it in the New York Times, it must be credible. There must be something to it. He must need to go to jail. And on it went for 2 years. And now the truth is finally coming out. Well, last week we updated you, as we've been updating you for the last, 10, 12 weeks, on Brexit. It's not going so well. Theresa May, she doesn't have very many friends right now. And in Europe, of course, the bureaucrats, they're trying to impose the harshest possible conditions to Britain's exit from the EU whenever that happens. She's signed a few trade deals with smaller nations, but that's about it. And then meanwhile, you have the United States of America just urging the UK, look, get out. We're here. We're waiting. I mentioned at the top of the show this exchange that John Bolton had over the weekend with a Sky News reporter. And listen to this discussion. Here's clip two.
Theresa May in the UK has now suffered her third defeat. Does the prospect of a quick UK-US trade deal now look less likely?
I think to the contrary, people who worry about the UK crashing out of the European Union, that's the phrase they use, they're going to crash right into the United States. We're standing here waiting to make a trade deal with a United Kingdom independent of the European Union. I don't want to get into the specifics of what's been going on in the House of Commons, but I can say unequivocally that President Trump is eager for the will of the British people to be carried out, and he's even more eager to do a trade deal.
It does now look, though, that we may remain in the customs union, and we understand that that was a red line for the administration before. Is it not anymore?
The president wants to be able to deal with a Britain that can change some of the rules of trade that we think disfavor the United States when it's in connection with the European Union. And honestly, from the U.S. point of view, and for that matter, the U.K. point of view, I don't understand why you'd want to get out of the European Union but not be able to set your own rules. That's what independence means, and that's what the president wants to do. He thinks that the EU rules discriminate against American trade, and he wants a free, fair, and reciprocal trade deal with Great Britain.
That's John Bolton over the weekend speaking for the Trump administration. Some strong words there. And you can see, of course, there's work to be done in Britain as far as how this exit plays out. But more and more, you're seeing Europe on the one side and then the United States and Britain on the other. And this lines up perfectly with Bible prophecy. It also lines up perfectly with history. It's not like this was a new revelation over the weekend. This was something we spotlighted early on. in President Trump's presidency. Back at just, I think, soon after he was inaugurated, he welcomed Theresa May to the White House. And it was during this press conference when the president spoke up and said, yeah, we want to make trade deals with you, so come on out. This is clip four from 2017.
I think Brexit's going to be a wonderful thing for your country. I think when it irons out, you're going to have your own identity, and you're going to have the people that you want in your country, and you're going to be able to make free trade deals without having somebody watching you and what you're doing. And I had a very bad experience. I had something when I was in my other world. I have something in another country. And getting the approvals from Europe was very, very tough. Getting the approvals from the country was fast, easy, and efficient. Getting the approvals from the group, I call them the consortium, was very, very tough.
That's President Trump from January of 2017. And this was a stark contrast to what Barack Obama had said before he left office. Here you have the difference between the Jeroboam administration and then the Antiochus administration. This is what Obama said before leaving office. Clip five.
Our focus is in negotiating with a big bloc, the European Union, to get a trade agreement done. And UK is going to be in the back of the queue.
Barack Obama was saying, look, we're going to do deals with the EU. And if Britain leaves, they're going to have to get in the back of the line. He used the word queue like they use here in Britain. They're going to have to get in the back of the queue. And then here comes Donald Trump, who says, hey, I think it's great that you're leaving. I think this is good for the UK. And when you do leave, we'll be ready to cut a deal. And that's what John Bolton reiterated over the weekend. Look, we're standing here waiting to make a trade deal. You think this is going to be a crash leaving the EU? You can crash right into the United States. It's pretty amazing. Well, just to remind you of what the trumpet has forecast, and we were saying this with those statements from Barack Obama and then President Trump 2 years ago, a prophecy in Hosea 5 and verse 11 in particular, where it speaks of Ephraim or Britain following after the commandment of Jeroboam. And you can go back to the very first thing my father wrote following Donald Trump's election. It's in a 2016 coworker letter, November 23rd. Where he spoke of the Trump administration as that Jeroboam administration, and how that the Bible says Ephraim, Britain, is oppressed and broken in judgment. And then, of course, at that time, it was only 5-6 months away from the Brexit vote. The UK had decided to break away from Europe, and as my father said, when you see this play out, you're going to see Ephraim more and more desperate to make a trade deal with the U.S., and that's just going to bind these brothers more closely together, which fulfills this prophecy of Ephraim just going the way of Jeroboam. My father said it's possible that Prime Minister Theresa May, by throwing in her lot with Mr. Trump, could rot. Actually, this is, I'm just looking at my notes. This was actually from the New York Times at the time. It sounds like a trumpet statement. It says, it's possible that Prime Minister May, by throwing in her lot with Mr. Trump, could ride out any changes to the international order. Throwing in her lot with Mr. Trump with respect to trade. So we see this now playing out. Or at least it looks like it, just judging by some of these comments. We'll certainly keep an eye on it as we get closer and closer to Brexit, whenever that will be. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll talk about the big revelation yesterday regarding this bulla discovered at the ongoing excavations at the Givati parking lot adjacent to King David's Palace, right there in the city of David. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, King David has been in the news a fair bit the last couple of weeks, and as it usually is, You have some truth and a lot of errors as well. That's why you need the Trumpet magazine. That's why you need this work. You think about even the very name of my father's TV program, The Key of David, the new book that we have, The New Throne of David, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, all that history surrounding the throne of David. The prophecies in Luke 1 about Jesus Christ returning to rule from the throne of David. We need God's truth to understand. We need God's church. And you certainly see that when you come across an article like in Haaretz, the Israeli paper from a couple of weeks ago, Meet the Real King David, the one the Bible didn't want you to know about. What does that mean? The real King David? And then the article goes on to talk about how there's archaeologists in Israel today. These are the minimalists, the ones that want to minimize David's kingdom and say that it was, well, really, it was just kind of, he was a tribal chieftain. He was insignificant. He really wasn't a powerful ruler. He really wasn't heading up this magnificent kingdom and then handing it over to his son, who then built this magnificent temple. It was all so much smaller than what the Bible recounts. Of course, we can't believe the Bible. And so these modern archaeologists are talking about how that so much of the glory anciently was actually Jeroboam II. These are the findings that are of true significance. Jeroboam II's rule. And, of course, the Bible does talk about his expanding kingdom. We've talked about it in the Saving America article just from a year ago. But the fact that they would use this then to minimize David's kingdom, yet another attack on David, yet another attack on the truth of the Bible. And that was just a week or two ago. And then you have yesterday's or this weekend's revelation. These two bullae that were discovered at the City of David's Givati parking lot excavation. Some of you that have visited the City of David before, you go into the tourist center on that that road that cuts through Silwan. If you're heading south, the tourist center is on the left, and then over on the right, you have this massive excavation that's been going on, I think, for 10 years, and it's only in the last year or so that they've gotten to the real interesting period, the first temple period. So now they're starting to discover bullae And one of them has the name inscribed, Natan Melech, servant of the king. That's what it says on this bulla. And you can look at 2 Kings 23 and verse 11. I think if we don't have an article posted at the Trumpet right now, it will be up soon. But there's one going up today that talks about this revelation. And of course, we're happy to report on it. We get excited when we see these kinds of revelations. And yet at the same time, here is an assistant. This story got a headline, and it also showed the picture on the Drudge Report yesterday. I think it's still up there, in fact. This servant of King Josiah is possibly King Josiah's servant. And yet, just going back a year, just 12 months ago, there was no such link on the Drudge Report. There was no such New York Times revelation, not that I know of, that was talked about in the New York Times, not like this weekend. And I don't want to take anything away from this discovery. It is. It's just yet another in the long line of many, many, many of these kinds of discoveries. But I can't help but to think that because we're involved oftentimes with some of these spectacular discoveries of Dr. Elat Mazar, that it gets downplayed or ignored. It shouldn't be. Here you have Natan Melech, perhaps the servant. He's the servant to the king. It's not a bulla with the king's inscription itself. It's a servant to the king. Last year, we were talking about Hezekiah the king. And then you add Isaiah to that story. And then the fact that it's we went out there and had the reception down in Jerusalem in June of last year. And there was a good bit of coverage in the Israeli papers in particular. But not near as much as there should have been. And here this exhibit. It went on for, 9 months? It finishes up just yesterday. And then news breaks of this bulla, found just a stone's throw away from King David's palace. The servant to Josiah. The City of David Foundation Vice President, Doron Spielman, he said this is an extremely exciting find for billions of people worldwide. The ongoing archaeological excavations at the City of David continue to prove that ancient Jerusalem is no longer just a matter of faith, but also a matter of fact. You can see what motivates David Beery and the others, Doron Spielman here, and we've had interaction with both of them, even recently. But you can see what drives them. It's their history. This is the real Jerusalem. People think Jerusalem is the cramped quarters inside those old city walls. It's actually just outside of it. The Ophel, City of David, David's Palace. The New York Times said, this was from yesterday, Dr. Godot, he's the one overseeing the Givati parking lot excavation. He says it took him and his fellow archaeologists, Dr. Yiftach Shalev, that's someone that Brent Noctegal, our correspondent in Jerusalem, he's known Yiftach for 10 years. He used to work in Dr. Mazar's digs. He thinks very highly of Dr. Mazar. And as I say, he and Brent, they go way back. He and our other excavators from over the years, they go way back. Now he's Yiftach is working with Dr. Godot. These two are presiding over the dig at the City of David. It says it took them only a few minutes to read the ancient Hebrew on the clay bulla, which dates to the middle of the 7th or beginning of the 6th century BC, judging by the cycle, or rather the style of writing on it and the pottery found next to it. It reads Natan Melech. And then a couple of other Hebrew words that mean the king's servant. Natan Melech, the king's servant. The New York Times says, so who was Natan Melech? And why does he matter? The reason he is important is because of a man he served, King Josiah. This clip that we'll play for you, it comes from a YouTube video that these two have put together, Dr. Gadot and Yiftach, the archaeologist that we met many years ago. And it's their video on this breaking news. You'll hear Yiftach talking first. He'll describe here the scene or the room in which this bulla was discovered. And then they have another archaeologist, a lady after him, that comes in talking about this being the bulla of Natan Melech. Here's clip three.
I'm standing right now in one of the rooms of a very large structure, a structure that was built somewhere in the late 8th or 7th century BC and was destroyed in a big fire, most probably at 586 BC during the Babylonian conquest of Jerusalem. The room was preserved and it was filled with the destruction, most probably of the second floor above it. What you can see behind me, for example, stones from the walls of the second store, burnt beams, and pottery vessels that was probably in the house when it was destroyed. The size of this structure, the ashlar stones from which it was built, and other remains that were found within it, indicate that this house was not a regular dwelling. This was probably the house of a very rich person, maybe an officer or someone from the administration of Jerusalem. One of the most special finds that were found right here in this room is a small bulla.
So this is the bulla of one Natan Melech, servant of the king. And since he is not mentioned with his last name, only first name, we can understand that he was a pretty famous person here in Jerusalem during the mid-7th century, time of King Josiah. Now this name, Natan Melech, is mentioned in the Bible only once, in the second book of Kings, where he is mentioned as an official of King Josiah in a story about the famous religious reforms of King Josiah, who removed the horses that the former kings of Judah dedicated to the sun. The $1 million question is, am I holding in my hand the bulla of the same Natan Melech who's mentioned in the Bible?
It's an amazing discovery, yet another. And as I say, a list, a long line of spectacular discoveries, including, as I said earlier, Isaiah the prophet. That was just a year ago, King Hezekiah, a few months before that. You can go back a few years earlier to Jehuchal and Gedaliah, the servants of Zedekiah that are mentioned in Jeremiah 37, 38. But you look at that most recent exhibit, the one that ended in Edmund just yesterday, the seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah discovered. That's been in the grand lobby of Armstrong Auditorium for 9 months, and on the same day that we close it down and move it back to Israel, here comes news of this new Natan Melech seal. And so the history continues to be uncovered. It's a shame, just looking back over the past year, it's a shame that the Drudge Report didn't give Hezekiah and Isaiah the kind of attention that it gave to this one. Accompanying this breaking news at the New York Times, there was a lengthy article in the New York Times yesterday, the Sunday Review. Can an archaeological dig change the future of Jerusalem? Now, this is an article that talks about some of the spectacular finds, but that also talks about just how controversial it is to be digging in the city of David. The author here opens up with an explanation of what a bulla is. It's actually helpful information for those who would be unfamiliar with archaeology. I think most of our listeners have a little bit of an awareness of the tiny size of these bullae, about the size of the tip of your pinky finger, but how that they were used as seals or signets, a signature that you would put on a document of some kind. It says, this bulla, it's quoting Dr. Gadot, this bulla connects to a whole context, a whole world that we have been uncovering in this spot. It says the spot he's talking about is the city of David, the mound of ancient Jerusalem, which archaeologists have been trying to uncover for 150 years. Now it goes on and talks about Dr. Godot saying that he's in the midst of this ferocious debate over King David and his kingdom, and how that Dr. Godot himself is of the minimalist category, one who's more skeptical about the size of King David's reign, his kingdom. I'm not sure where Yiftach stands on that. But in any event, this article at the New York Times, it says, but almost all agree on the big picture, which is that the 11-acre mound is the seat of the Davidic dynasty, which begot what we now call Jewish civilization. Godot says, you cannot cast doubts over the importance of this place. This is the Acropolis of Israel. This is ancient Jerusalem. It's ancient Jerusalem. It says you cannot, well, further on, there's just one problem. This is the New York Times author. The Acropolis of Israel is being unearthed in East Jerusalem, which much of the world, so here's the politicized angle, much of the world does not regard as belonging to the state of Israel. And it is being unearthed, at least in part, beneath the homes of Palestinians, from land that those Palestinians want to be incorporated into their future state, land that those Palestinians, in some cases, are squatting on, building, even when they don't have the building permit. It says, if any archaeological dig in this part of the world is bound to hit on ethnic, national, and religious fault lines, this one is the Middle Eastern equivalent of the San Andreas. It's talking about this spot. 11, 12, 13 acres. This spot, in some ways, even more contentious than the Temple Mount. You could see where this would. She's right, this author. She's right. You could see where this could lead to quite a lot of division and perhaps even violence. It says, because in Jerusalem, the contest over the city's past is part of the war over its future. The latest finding, it goes into some of the detail here with Natan Melech, and we do have an article posted. It's featured right now at the top of the trumpet.com website, one by Warren Reinsch and Christopher Eames. So they worked last night and this morning on that. That's at thetrumpet.com. This New York Times article gives the bonanza of finds over the last several years. Bulle with the names of two characters from the book of Jeremiah, that's Jeuchal and Gedaliah. A large stone building from the 10th century BC that some have theorized was King David's palace. That would be Dr. Mazar. She's not mentioned in this article, unfortunately. She should be, at least with that very statement I just gave you there. A pool from the 1st century AD that many believe is the Pool of Siloam, mentioned in the Gospel of John. It says further on, eggplant seeds from the early Islamic period. I'm not familiar with those as much. Coins, cooking vessels, and an engraving of the menorah left behind in a 2,000-year-old drainage channel by Jewish rebels hiding from the Romans. I assume that's talking about the one Dr. Mazar found up on the Ophel. It mentions here as well an ancient Roman road that may have taken hundreds of thousands of Jewish pilgrims up to the Second Temple. Well, this author asked David Friedman, and if you've watched the news with Donald Trump or any of these ceremonies in Jerusalem or wherever, he's the current American ambassador to Israel, and the New York Times journalist asked him what this place meant to him, the city of David. What does it mean to you? And he said, without hesitating, he said, everything. It means everything. When was it? Last week when we mentioned that picture, or maybe it was the week before, Benjamin Netanyahu together with Mike Huckabee in Shiloh. And they're chatting there with Ray Oot, another archaeologist that we've worked with for years. She's been on our videos. Talking about the Hezekiah Bulla. Showing a picture, describing the picture of the Bulla. And here the Bulla, as of yesterday, it was in Edmond, Oklahoma. That's been its home for the past 9 months. The New York Times says here, this nationalist religious organization plays three roles. Well, it's talking about the City of David here. It transitions into the organization, Ir David, the City of David, the organization headed up by David Beery, the one that we met with just a few weeks ago. And the New York Times doesn't think very highly of this group, but it does give quite a lot of helpful information about it. It says, first, the City of David established and operates the City of David National Park. More than 600,000 tourists visited last year to view the excavation. Second, though, the archaeological dig is carried out under the auspices of the Israeli Antiquities Authority. The foundation, together with the government of Israel, the Jerusalem the Ministry of Tourism, and the Prime Minister's Office underwrites it. So there's lots and lots of support for this. And David Beery, he indicated this to us when we met with him back in February. Maybe it was early March, I forget now. But in any event, it is the City of David. It's a group that has a lot of support from the Ministry of Tourism, the Antiquities Authority, the Israeli government. The Times says here, third and most controversially, it acquires homes to help settle Jewish families in Arab neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, especially Wadi Hilwa, where the dig is located. And so David Beery, his organization, they've been, as we've said before, they've been buying up some of the property there. Jewish residents have been. So there's something like 1,000 Jews that live in the midst of several thousand Arabs now, Palestinians. And then it gets into sort of a biographical sketch of David Beery, who's 65 years of age. He was born in Israel to parents who survived Auschwitz. His parents survived Auschwitz. And when he was a young man, the article says, he served in Sayeret Matkal, the most prestigious unit of the Israeli military. His commander was Yoni Netanyahu, the prime minister's older brother. If some of this sounds familiar, it's because you read the March 11th coworker letter my father sent out several weeks ago. Now it's in the New York Times. Just a few weeks later. In the 1980s, he was asked to help command a new elite counterterrorism unit called Duv Divan, which would send Israeli soldiers undercover as Arabs to Palestinian neighborhoods. And then he gives the story here that we just heard a few weeks ago. He told us the same thing about how he was working undercover at Silwan. It's a dangerous job. He's hearing all of this chatter, even from Palestinians who are talking about, yeah, this is King David's. This is the area of King David's palace. This is where King David lived. This is it. This is the City of David. And the article says here, one day, this is quoting from David Beery, one day I came to Michael, that's his wife, and I said, Michael, this is the City of David. This is our historical capital. And here I cannot walk here as a Jew. I'm going to change it. I'm going to leave the army and bring back tourists and visitors to this place. One day we're going to live here. That's what David Beery said years ago. Coming out of the 70s, early 80s. And guess what? He established the City of David Foundation in 1986, the same year Herbert Armstrong died. And then I forget the year that he moved there, the early 1990s. This article, I don't have time to get into all of it, but later on, it quotes this prominent Palestinian activist who said that David Beery is more powerful than Netanyahu. If you haven't read the March 11th coworker letter, this is the last coworker letter that my father sent out just a few weeks ago. You can see why. You can see why my father was as excited as he was with that meeting we were able to have, with that meeting that, we think, quite miraculously opened up, my father said in that coworker letter. Mr. Beery told us that a new excavation at the palace, one in which we would be involved, that it would happen within 2 years, and it's going to happen with Dr. Mazar presiding over it. So we were encouraged, excited by that. And then my father said this, after an hour and a half of meeting with Mr. Beery, I left with a strong feeling that we are at the beginning of a new open door in Israel. This could be the most important trip to Jerusalem we have made to date. So that was some exciting news from that recent coworker letter. And then with all that, I have some other quotes here that I think are interesting, but I don't have time to get to them all. But to have all of these headlines then over the weekend, coming on the weekend when we brought the Hezekiah Isaiah exhibit to an end, and now we continue. We continue right on. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm, or you can send us a voicemail. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.